Welcome to The Definition. I'm your host, Martin Friel. First time hosting a pod for the 90 Minute Cynic, so a little bit nervous. We'll see how we get on. What is The Definition? Well, what we're going to try and do is take some of the kind of key personalities, the characters in football, and really explore what they really mean. So for this episode of The Definition, we're looking at football bastards. What is a football bastard? To sort of go through and look at the bad boys of football, I brought three bad boys with me. First one, he's just kissed his arm. Yeah, you know, try to put me off, throw me off my stride early doors, but yeah, it's Chris Gayle.
I just kissed my muscles. And I sort of, and I'm also wearing a hot Rowdy Roddy Piper t-shirt, and he was one of wrestling's bastards. So I don't know if I get an extra point straight off the bat. And I don't know if there are points, but...
There are points, and I was correct to say you were kissing your arm because you don't have any muscles, but thank you.
Wow.
Let's move on. I should also tell people that because I'm from the East Coast, I'm quite abrupt. I really don't care much for chit-chat, so I will move on pretty quickly if I find people boring. So thank you very much, Chris Gallagher. Let's move on. Christopher Bowd, great to see you. How are you?
And you, sir, and you. I'm great. Lovely to see your lovely face. I'm not just buttering up the judge of the definition here. I also liked your intro where you defined the definition. That's pretty good. Pretty good start.
Do you know what? I didn't even think of that, but yes, that's exactly what I was going for. Thank you. But do you know what? I'm happy with you, Chris Bowd. Thank you. Somebody I'm guaranteed to be happy with, Mr. Paul Carlin. How are you?
Hey, Martin. Listen, great intro. Loved it. To the point. I definitely loved it.
Good.
That's this... define in the word. Use the word define and definite.
See, Christopher Gallagher, you've got a lot to live up to here. You've got two guys already top of their game. You know, you and your flimsy arms, you know, up a notch here, pal.
Off to a bad start, in my opinion, but hey, that's just me. I've got different standards.
I heard an anecdote about Rowdy Roddy Piper. Just to start this podcast on a tangent, I don't know where I heard it, that he went to Ireland and he met some fancy guy in Ireland who was the definition of someone who has lots of property but no money. And he looked like all the paintings that were in his house. Does this ring a bell for anybody? Where did I hear this anecdote?
Is this a Simpsons episode?
Is this gibberish, Paul? What are you talking about?
What are we here to talk about?
They're not even sentences. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that anecdote.
Do you know what, Paul? It's not your fault, because in the notes I said rabbit holes and anecdotes are to be encouraged. Yes. So do you know what? I've only myself to blame. That's fine.
So, Rowdy Piper was a two-time Golden Glove boxing champion, just so you're aware.
Not Scottish, by the way.
Well, that's for the courts to decide.
Had never been to Scotland until like much later in his life.
He actually genuinely does have family in Scotland, though. So even though he hadn't been to Scotland, he does actually have family in Scotland. I mean, he's not Scottish, but...
A little xenophobic from all of you, really. If Rowdy Piper wants to identify as Scottish, I'm all for it.
I'm with you, Bowd.
I only care about Irish and Italian people, Bowd. You know this. And Canadians. Oh, is Rowdy Roddy Piper Canadian?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I love that guy.
Martin, you need to get this under control quite quickly or it will just take off.
Yeah, I will step on all of you. Don't worry.
Good.
So, football bastards. I thought we'd lead off with a topic that is very close to my heart because I absolutely love an absolute bastard on the pitch. So tonight, we've laid out three parts to our afternoon. So the first part, we're going to be looking at Celtic's bastards, and I've asked each of our guys to prepare, the Celtic bastard that really epitomises to them the definition of a bastard. Then we're going to move on. We're going to talk about some wee guys, you know, shitebags, you know, players who like to come at you, but actually they've got none. Empty. We'll refer to that as probably the Joey Barton section, but that's fine. And then part three, we're going to turn it into a wee bit of a competition. I'm going to try and eke out the inner bastard out of each of these guys here. We are going to effectively get them to pitch their ultimate football bastard. So it'll be somebody non-Celtic related, but really what they're having to do is pitch to me who is the definition of a football bastard. And I'm top bastard, so I get to choose. So if you don't like my sort of choice in the end, tough shit. Right, before we get cracking, I've set you all just a wee task. I'm quite interested to know, as you know, top class professional footballers yourselves, on the pitch, what kind of player were you? Were you a bit of a bastard on the pitch? Did you, you know, what's your kind of favourite memory of shithousery on the field? Christopher Bowd, I'm going to come to you first because I've got a feeling that you might have been a bit of a bastard on the pitch.
I was not. Maybe I was a bastard. I was a defender, so I had to boss and dominate people, which is just me in general. That's my life. So I suppose you could call me a bit of a bastard. You might be better asking Chris because he's played it against me.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, what I would say about Bowd was he legitimately was a bastard to get away from, because essentially Bowd was like one of those, see when you give someone a task and they do it to like an nth degree, where it was like, Bowd, mark him, aye, and he would mark you and it would be awful and you just couldn't get away from him. And
I'm hearing Hatem El Hamid here.
That level of quality, I'll be honest with you.
And that level, handsome. And the looks.
And just handsome, yep.
Yeah, because when we played originally, he did have hair. And so did I.
Lots of it.
So, you know, that's how long ago that we used to play regularly. But, you know, Bowd was a bastard in that you just could not get away from him. He stuck to you like glue. Very good.
And how about yourself, Gal? Were you a bit naughty?
I was the classic number 9, unfit, lazy, selfish, shoot-on-sight striker. But there was a period when we were younger where I was... played a little bit further back, and I broke Christopher McFadden's leg.
Twice.
Wow. In the same game?
But I broke his leg, and then he went away to hospital or whatever, I don't know. And then he got
better. Usually you go to hospital if you break
And then
your
he
leg.
Got better, and then a couple of weeks later I did it again.
the future of Scottish football, that has to be said.
And he still kicks about. I don't even, by the way, I just know this story because I love it so much, because it is the ultimate bastard thing to do. Does he not still kick about Shaun's girl?
Well, I was having a pint with him about, you know, in about January time. We laughed, we reminisced, we had a chat about it. He doesn't hold any grudges. I made sure of that.
By breaking his leg for a third time.
he does, not legitimately though, Bowdy was there, two fair tackles. And it was one of those things. But he didn't try to get by me again, is all I'll say. So he learned his lesson.
Do you know what? I hadn't expected this rabbit hole, but it's a peach.
Yeah, well.
Paul, can you match this absolute scumbag?
It won't surprise you to find out, Martin, that I was a gentleman and a cultured footballer. Obviously.
You're covered by your Italian...
Well, I stopped playing when I was like 13 because I got into drums. I just sort of stopped playing football completely, really. But then I started playing fives again, probably when I was about 30. And I just get accused of being quite elbowy. But I think it's just because I'm so like lithe.
You've got a bit of the Lee McCulloch about you, to be honest.
thank you. Oh, I forgot all about him. My cousin John, who has probably committed the worst thing I've ever seen on a fives pitch, used to give me a really hard time just saying I was really elbowy. But, you know, everyone's a bit elbowy. If you're not a bit elbowy, are you even playing football?
It's true. The other bastard thing I was thinking of, which was just me being hard, but I thought that's quite bastardy, when I was a very wee guy, probably second year or something like that. Playing football up the golfies.
Oh, aye.
And so it's a hill. It's a golf course. It's a hill. It's where we played football. And I kind of fell down the way going down the hill, and my hand got caught in a hole. Not like the actual hole in the green, but just a hole in the mud. And I broke my arm, but continued to play on for at least 15 minutes after because I was a wee hard bastard.
Until Chris Gallagher came and halved you and broke your leg.
I did learn my lesson, though.
You did learn
a valuable lesson.
Yeah, and also his arm wasn't hurting anymore because of the leg. So, you know, problem solved.
Yeah.
I think we found our football bastard, by the way. It's Chris Gallagher.
Yeah.
We'll see you. We'll see you down the road.
It's absolutely.
I was a bit of a shit on the football pitch, and I think that part of that came from I used to play rugby as well, so it was encouraged with rugby on a Sunday, and I would take it onto the pitch on a Saturday as well. And I think the worst that I've done is, so my coach at rugby used to say when I was playing scrum half to stand on the toes of the opposition, either the flanker or just somebody in the scrum when they kind of get you, stand on their toes just to piss them off a little bit. So I used to do it all the time, and I thought it was hilarious. And even you look at the ref, and they'd smile as well. I was like, ah, it's part of the game, eh? And then I thought, well, on a Saturday, you know, this little winger's giving me a bit of jib. I'll just stand on his toes. We'll just mark my territory a little bit. And, yeah, immediately sent off. Like,
really?
Yeah,
gone. That was just normal for us. It was just like, you know, corners and stuff, going stand on the goalie's toes. And
I see, that was the problem, that it was effectively kickoff.
Wow.
I think we'd only played 30 seconds and I was standing next to him. I just decided just to make sure he was in for a match, and it turned out he had no match because there was no fullback for the remainder of the match.
Thug. You're a thug, Friel. Disgusting.
Yes.
The thing is, at least it's not like rugby where all the players after the match just go into the changing rooms and just piss on each other.
drink a pint of their old piss and stick their fingers up their bumholes.
That's what they do in rugby. They all piss on each other afterwards.
That's it. And on that bombshell, we will move on. This is going to be rabbit hole central, isn't it? Okay. Right. Let's move on to sort of the first proper part. So Celtic's bastard. So I've set you each a task. I want you to kind of define the epitome of what a football bastard is, and I've asked you to each select the Celtic player that epitomises that for you. So I think we've all shared all our ideas, so keen to get everybody's thoughts as well. But I think I'm trying to gauge the... Yeah, you all look fairly benign. I'm going to say Christopher Gallagher. You're going to go last.
Okay.
Paul Carlin, you are going to go on my second whistle. Christopher Bowd, lead the way, please, with your Celtic bastard.
So my Celtic bastard, unsurprisingly, is Scott Brown. The greatest Celtic bastard ever. The greatest Celt ever. I don't think anyone can deny that.
Sorry, I'm laughing too much to deny it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, for me, Scott Brown is the ultimate bastard. Being a bastard isn't... Being hard is part of it, but it's not just about hacking people. You know, anybody can do that. I don't think that just makes you a bastard, not an actual football bastard.
Yes.
What Scott Brown does, I mean, he does muscle people out of games, but what he does is he infuriates the other team. He gets under their skin, whether it be snidey little remarks or just what he does, getting in their way, breaking up their play, and he gets in their heads. He affects the entire opposition side and makes them play worse whilst bringing up the rest of his own team. And I think that's what you want from a bastard. You want him to be hated by the opposition. And a lot of bastards, especially my non-Celtic bastard is a great example of it, will have a specific rival maybe, or maybe even a team that don't like him. Scott Brown is too good to have a Rangers player that's yes. really his rival.
Yes.
It's not even Rangers that are his rival. It's all of Scottish football. Scott Brown. And with no real reason.
No real reason, Jesus Christ, Bowd.
I mean, he dominates them. He dominates them all. But, I mean, we've talked about it before. I meant to actually pull up the stats, but I was too lazy to do it. But we were looking at, like, how many fouls you need before you get a booking. I think Ryan Christie was something stupid, like 17. But Scott Brown, unsurprisingly, was the person who got booked most quickly for his fouls. He's not a dirty player. He just... is very good. He's not a dirty player. I see that smile. He's good at annoying the other team. He's good at getting in their way. He's good at little tackles that might infuriate people. But he does it, he very rarely gives fouls away, and when he does, it's for a good reason.
So I'm really glad you picked up early. So I didn't want to make this the Celtic Hardmen pod. I purposely chose Bastards because I think you're quite right. You can, kicking a guy is only part of being a bastard. There's a whole spectrum of shithousery that goes on. I think you're spot on with Scott Brown just being able to be effectively in everybody's head, certainly in Scottish football, but I think we've seen it in Europe a few times as well. So at home, he's been able to effectively just take players out of the game.
Absolutely. And the one, I was kind of thinking of different games. There was March last year, I think we won 2-1 against Rangers. Scott Brown got Morelos sent off. He should have had someone else sent off. People were trying to punch him in the face. And then even the interview after it, Gerrard was talking about Scott Brown and how he's antagonising his entire team. It's just, he's living rent-free, not just in their players' heads, but in their manager's head. He absolutely owns them. And as a great bastard can really do, not just does he fuck up the other team, but Scott Brown is tenacious. He drives our team forward. And we all know that without Scott Brown in that midfield, it just doesn't look as good. The team just don't give as much, and he's there for his teammates. So he is a bastard to, he's a bastard to his enemies, but he's the best friend you could ever have. Please, Paul, be my friend, Scott.
Paul, how do you feel about Scott Brown?
Now I'm a wee bit unclear whether you want us to just discuss Brown, or are we trying to discredit Boud here?
No.
The discrediting's for the final round. That's fine, right? Well, I'll just disregard all the terrible things I wrote about Scott Brown. I like Boud, absolutely love the guy. It's the players that he kind of gets under the skin of, like Graham Shinney, kind of nothingy Plankton Aberdeen player from a couple of years ago. Just, it's these wee guys that think they are as good as him, as strong as him, as tenacious as him, and none of them are. He absolutely humiliated Joey Barton a few seasons ago, and that the post-match quotes, something along the lines of, you know, he just kind of almost, I can't remember exactly what it was he says, it was just wiping the floor with him. He's nothing, they are nothing, they will win nothing, they will always be nothing, and that is part of that is down to Bruni. He's the perfect type of player that if you don't like that team, you'll hate his guts. If he's your player, you'll absolutely adore him. And he definitely is the beating heart of Celtic and has been for a long time. And, you know, he's definitely the man to lead us to, fingers crossed, 10 in a row, if that happens, depending on what happens with the season, of course. And it's all just down to his attitude. His attitude's amazing.
And do you know what's weird is that even as like a 18, 19-year-old at Hibs, you could tell that he had just this gallusness about him that I don't think we've really seen in Scottish football. Certainly, we haven't seen another player that is that gallus but can also back it up as well. I think you're right. There's lots of wee guys out there that try to mimic Scott Brown, but there's nobody else really out there. Certainly, this sort of current sort of period of footballers in Scotland that are able just to match that sheer level. Chris Gallagher, what do you reckon?
So there are so many points I've written down in regards to Scott Brown, and they're all incredible. In terms of shithousery, in terms of controlling the narrative, and in terms of just puppet on a string style stuff. However, for me, the one that defines Scott Brown as a footballing bastard would be at Pittodrie, when he gets the two Aberdeen players come and half him, the foul's given, he's rolling around the floor, and then all of a sudden his roll turns into a walk and he just starts walking and he starts reacting towards the crowd as if to say, you can't touch me, nothing sticks, I'm Scott Brown. That to me is just, I've got like a 7-point plan of what a football ambassador should be, and I'll share it with you later. But part of that is playing up to the crowd and letting the crowd know, hey, look, you can't touch me. I'm here. I'm winding you up. I'm winding your players up. And you can't touch me because the referee's over there. And that's exactly what Scott Brown done. He's magnificent at it.
The Bruni. The Bruni.
Yeah.
The original piece of shithousery, really. I mean, not the original, but the kind of that moment was where he upgraded his shithousery and his bastard level at that point.
And the other thing that sticks out for me for Scott Brown is for the amount of melees that he gets into and the number of guys who are barking at him, scheming at him, trying to half him, I can't remember very many times seeing an angry Scott Brown on the pitch. Well, actually, he's a very level-headed, and I think that actually antagonises them even more, how much he enjoys seeing the sort of nastiness coming out of other players. I think he finds it funny, or at least he likes to show them that it's funny, because it gets under the skin even more. I can't even think of a time where he's actually lost the rag.
I think you're right. I can think of a time, and I think the evolution of Scott Brown came from this moment. The evolution of Scott Brown into the player, the bastard, the intelligent bastard that he is now, comes from the Neymar kick. I think Neymar really wound Scott Brown up, and he reacted, and he obviously gets sent off. And I think he learned from that. I really do. And I think he learned that, okay, don't put myself out there again like that. Be subtle in what you're doing, and just, you know, have a, you know, sharper edge. And, you know, utilize all of the things you can to really, you know, antagonize, because he lost his head against Neymar, and he just stupidly kicked him, and he reacted. And I think that the evolution of Scott Brown almost stems from that.
Do you guys think that Scott Brown, though, he's definitely a football bastard, and he's amazing, wonderful person, and a great guy to have in your team. But do you ever wonder if he's actually more of like an evil genius?
Like Pinky from Brain, from Pinky and the Brain?
Yeah, because I think he's so intelligent, and he uses his intelligence so well to wind up teams, players, fans, but without pushing it too far. I think the guy's intelligence is probably his biggest bastard sub-trait, if you know what I mean.
I think his, like, if you want to call it streetwise or whatnot, or sort of street smart, that he's the sort of fella that you just can't score one over. He never gets himself in a position where he'll end up looking like a fud. Even outside a kebab shop at 3 a.m. but no, I think you're right. Chris Bowd, I'm going to put you on the spot now. So we're going to try and write the definition for a football bastard. So I'm going to ask you for kind of three words that kind of sum up the football bastard that is Scott Brown. I didn't tell you this was happening, so I'm going to fill the dead air while you mull it over.
Can I just have another colour, given up while Bowd's thinking, another couple of examples that I've quickly jotted down. Pointing to the sign at Hampden when Celtic were beating Rangers in the semi-final, pointing to it and making that face like, ooh, awful, because he was getting Andy Halliday was trying to wind him up. That was terrific. He also knew he was on camera, so he literally made that whole thing about him, which was fantastic. Celebrating post-match Ibrox with the glasses, top off, iconically, again, knowing it's been filmed and knowing that would get right in amongst them. The Bruni, absolutely dominating Joey Barton. And there's a lesser known picture of absolute perfection in terms of shithousery. Scotland, I think, are playing Lithuania, and there's a picture with Scott Brown with a big smile on his face and four Lithuanian players around him aggressively pointing at him. I don't know what happened. I'll get the picture and I'll put it up. I don't know what happened, but it's just Scott Brown standing with four guys aggressively pointing at him. Terrific.
Mr. Bowd,
yes,
are you ready?
Kind of, why not? I think the three words would either be sleek it or cunning. You need a little bit of, as you said, a little bit of smarts. Don't know if sleek it's maybe a little negative, but cunning.
Cunning, got it, yeah.
Influential. There's no point being a bastard if you can't actually change the game.
Yes.
And then, even more importantly, a winner. If you're not winning games for your team by being a bastard, again, you're just a cunt.
Jesus.
This isn't football cunts, it's football bastards.
Exactly. Strong words from a strong, mouthy man. I mean, complete agreement. Cunning, influential, winner. Definitely sort of words that I would put towards a football bastard. So, Paul, let's now move on to your Celtic football bastard.
So my football bastard describes himself as nasty and naughty. He is, you know, when you think of like a Jack Russell dog, how people describe a Jack Russell dog. But a lot of Jack Russell dogs are not the way that people think Jack Russell dogs are. A lot of Jack Russell dogs are actually quite docile and pleasant and fun and great family dogs. But some Jack Russell dogs are bastards. And this guy is basically the football equivalent of a Jack Russell dog. He is Scott McDonald. Okay, so our Australian number seven. Now, one of the main reasons that he is a bastard, not just a football bastard, but just a bastard, is scoring two goals against us to cost us the league, bastard, celebrating, and then having the nuts to fucking sign for us.
That is pretty ballsy.
I mean, saying he also, he's got like no real regrets about those goals. The guy kind of, his lack of feelings, his lack of empathy already puts him out there as a bastard. But ultimately, I think when I think of Scott McDonald as being a football bastard, he was just such an irritating player, always on the move, always moaning. Really, one of the moaniest players I think we've ever seen. But definitely, also, I mean, he was quite good. You know, think of like good goal scorers and good poachers. Inzaghi's not a great kind of reference point, but I always thought there was something quite similar about those two. Just a wee guy with wee guy mentality. But he did have some talent to back it up. A wank whenever he celebrated as well. Like, I don't know, just something about when Scott Brown scored a goal. He just had this arrogance.
We all enjoyed his goals, but we didn't go that far. That's
a bit so, so I know what you mean. So I think there's a common trait amongst Rangers players to look angry when they celebrate a goal. And Scott McDonald, even though he's not a Rangers man, he did look quite angry quite a lot of time when he was celebrating goals. That's something. Chris Boyd is the world's worst for it. You'd think that, you know, somebody had stamped on his foot every time he'd scored because he was just raging the whole time. But
well, McDonald did once do a Chris Boyd-esque thing for, I don't know what season it was. It was maybe like 08-09 or 09-10 where he came back from pre-season with, let's say, carrying a few extra pounds, and he wasn't playing well at all. But then he did the thing where he lift up his shirt and show his stomach to the fans, which is a total bastard thing to do. It's just completely unnecessary because Chris Boyd did that as well. He was not also accused of like leaking dressing room stories to the press when Mowbray was the manager. It's a pretty bastardly thing to do, right? Also, to cap it all off, he played for fucking Partick Thistle, which, you know, to go from Celtic to playing to Partick Thistle, at least it wasn't Rangers, but I think that's quite... I just don't think he really gives a fuck what anyone thinks about him. The thing about McDonald also is that he moaned not only at like the ref, but he moaned at his own teammates. You know, he was the epitome of the huffy striker who he couldn't really pass himself, but if any passes went astray, he'd just be like huffing and puffing, just like a petulant teenager. Yeah, a total bastard.
Do you know, so I'm really glad you picked Scott McDonald because he's a different type of bastard. He's a player that I really enjoyed at Celtic, but as soon as he left, he was completely gone to me, as if he's no longer part of sort of a player that I care about. But for that sort of period of time that he was there, he was exactly what I wanted in, you know, if you had a big man, little man combination. He is your stereotypical sort of pain in the arse, just constantly in your face and moaning. And also, he's absolutely one of those players that seems to want to, he has to get angry to try and play well. Another guy that we had like that was Craig Bellamy, who I think he's even said himself, he only played well when he was angry. So I think the pair of them are a bit like that.
Chris Gallagher, wee guy mentality.
The biggest part of Scott McDonald's football bastardry is the fact that he would leave the boot in. It was dirty. And then he would do the whole thing of, look, I'm a striker. You know, oh, come on, ref. How am I supposed to stop there? I'm running
in. Look at the size of me.
Fuck it. Do you know what I mean? I'm a striker. I'm a forward. I can't. Done a lot. Done it specifically. And I like this. He did it specifically in Europe. I think it was the AC Milan game where Paolo Maldini is seen as a sort of, you know, one of the great artisan footballers of all time. He's almost a work of art in his own. He should be allowed to kind of, you know, flock and walk through the meadows of football and tapestry, including Celtic Park. Scott McDonald's in, showing him no respect, straight in, but not only putting pressure on him, but fouling him, showing no respect, fouling him, and then when the foul is given against Scott McDonald, moans at the referee because he should have got the free kick. It's a bastardy thing to do, but also what's great about it is it shakes up Maldini. He used everything he had in his locker very, very well, Scott McDonald. Then again, obviously, 2 minutes later when the ball comes to him and he misplaces the pass, you know, you've made an ass of it. So
Whoa. This isn't just starting to shit on footballers' abilities. Okay?
By the way.
Let's just stick to his positive traits of being a bastard. Let's not. I'm going to put you on a yellow card.
I think that is part of it, though, Martin. I think the fact that he wasn't a world class striker. He was a really good striker for us. Really good, and I mean, where would we have been without him at certain times? You know. But I think the fact that he kind of was limited sometimes. Certainly when it came to passing, makes his bastardry all the more emphatic.
He leveraged that being a bastard to make him a better player.
Yes. Correct. Yeah. Absolutely correct. Absolutely nailed it. I loved him. I thought he was great.
I love him too. Yeah, he's seen that. He's like the bastard you hate to love, I think.
Yeah.
Scott McDonald.
He was. He did whine a little bit too much. There's a point where it's like, see if you moan at every decision, Scott. You're the boy that cried wolf. The referee's not going to pay attention anymore. Calm it down a little bit.
It's a fair point, to be fair. Mean, he did go over the top a lot of the time. It was, you know, he's moaning at himself at points, just to, you know, reflectively. But, you know, I liked him.
If you have to then choose your words to summarise Scott McDonald, Would you use the same sort of cunning, influential, and winner?
No.
No.
I think we're thinking more like antagonistic.
Yes.
Niggly. And gobby. Yeah, let's go with gobby.
Nice.
Niggly wee gobby bastard. I think that's about right.
Yeah, because he was a different kind of bastard from Scott Brown and a different kind of bastard from the play we're about to talk about.
Yeah, and I think that's the nice thing about football bastards and why it's the whole purpose of the definition, and that it's not obvious. There's not just a one typecast to this sort of thing. There's different ways of being a bastard on the pitch. So we've had two different strong examples. But I'm teeing you up, Chris Gallagher, because the example you're bringing to the table is a player that I hold so, so dear to my heart. And it is probably the player who actually prompted this whole idea for me in the first place. So, Mr. Christopher Gallagher, please take it away.
What do you get if you cross a ballerina and a bastard? Chris Sutton. That's who you get. Chris Sutton, one of the greatest bastards in football. You know, this podcast, I was asked to define what a footballing bastard was. I've created a 7-point plan for you, ladies and gentlemen. Point one.
Would it not be a ballastard? Is that not?
Oh.
I've created a 7-point plan. here are my points that I was thinking about today. I was kind of thinking over in my head. What defines a bastard? So I've came up with 7 points. Number one, in my opinion, they have to be a quality player. So if you're not a quality player, that's a different type of... That would be a different category, and it's something we'll come to later on. So yes, you have to be a quality player. Number two, you have to be intelligent enough to get away with shenanigans.
Shenanigans. Beautiful. Beautiful.
You have to be intelligent enough to get away with shenanigans.
I love that. He's literally, it's a manifesto. Chris is pointing at the camera.
Yes.
Waving right. like a little mad dictator.
If you vote for me, this is my manifesto. Number three, slick enough to have the referee wrapped around your finger dash to a degree.
I'm glad you then explained the dash, because round your finger dash, it sounded like it was going to be another appendage, and I was getting a little bit...
Oh.
Number four, play up to the crowd, specifically yes. the away crowd at away venues. Number five, tough but vulnerable, in brackets, diving. And again, that's something we'll come back to. Number six, smash mouth quotes.
Yes.
And this is number seven. This might be quite contentious. Sometimes just a prick, even to your own fans. And I've got an example of all these that I'll run through. I don't want to take up all your time, gentlemen. But I've got an example of all these.
I'll make sure you don't. Don't worry. I will cut you off. But you're doing a stellar job so far.
Thank you very much. So Chris Sutton, I've put, what do you get if you cross a ballerina and a bastard? Chris Sutton. The nimble touch of a... The nimble touch and class of a ballerina, the hard-nosed aggression of a bastard. Arrogant and aggressive, intelligent, and then I've put in brackets for no reason, dive forward, because he did that quite a bit. So, quality player, so have to be a quality player. There's absolutely no question that Chris Sutton is one of the greatest number nines that Celtic have ever had. He's won numerous Scottish Premier League titles, he's won numerous Scottish Cups, he's taken part in the Scottish, in the UEFA Cup final, all the way throughout that run, he was magnificent, quality player, no one can deny. Number two.
Player of the season one year as well, was it 03-04?
03-04, absolutely, 19 goals, top scorer.
I don't know why I asked, I know the answer, it's fine.
Number two, intelligent enough to
Scott
get...
Scott Brown's been player of the season, so...
It's not a competition, we're all on the same side, pal.
Has Scott McDonald ever been...
Scott McDonald was nominated.
I read that in his Wikipedia earlier.
And in some ways, that's better than actually winning the thing. It's an honour just to be nominated.
I bet you he was fucking mourning his face off when that was on.
we've interrupted Gal's flow here. I've got a feeling there's something pretty special about to come out.
Number two, intelligent enough to get away with shenanigans. 2004 versus Barcelona. I was at the game. We lost 2-1. Henrik Larsson scored. Or 3-1, sorry. Henrik Larsson scored. So Chris Sutton started on the bench. I actually remember this. I've obviously, you have to do a bit of research and you look up some stuff. But I remember this because I turned to my sister and I was like, did you just see that? Chris Sutton comes off the bench. Celtic are 1-0 down. Comes off the bench at half time. And the first thing he does is he elbows Puyol in the face. He just elbows him in the face. And it's not even a corner. And it's not even the ball. The ball's come. He elbows him in the face. Puyol gets absolutely shaken by it. And Sutton scores 10 minutes later. Just off the ball. The referee doesn't see it. He's intelligent enough to know how to get away with shenanigans.
It's like Father Ted when they kick the bishop up the arse.
Bishop,
he didn't do that, did he? There's no way he could have done that.
I remember seeing it happening. And I turned to my sister. I was like, did you just see that? It's like, Sutton just elbowed. She was like, why are you surprised? It's Chris Sutton. That was just him announcing himself, intelligent enough, sees where the referee is, sees where the linesman is. It's over the side where the linesman's up the other end. Terrific. Three each game. Versus Rangers, wallops Arteta, and then he demands that Arteta get booked for the foul?
Yes.
I think Sutton was going to get booked for the foul, but he's so angry.
He sowed confusion.
He sowed confusion into the referee. The referee then double takes to himself, who fouls who there? I don't know. Oh, I'm not going to book anyone. Let the game go. Incredible. Game versus Celta Vigo, grabs his face like he's been assaulted, and then drops to the ground, then looks up from his hands, sees that nobody is paying attention, so just gets up and runs on. Terrific. Final one here, slaps Beckham in a friendly to get a reaction, and he gets that reaction, and apparently he'd singled David Beckham out pre-match. He'd said in the pre-match kind of like huddle, just basically wind Beckham up. And also, he said to Beckham just before he slapped him, are you still shagging that pig, Victoria? It was his wife at the time.
That's unpleasant.
I thought he was going to be talking about the old pair or whatever, but there you go.
So number three,
Rebecca lose.
Slick enough to... Yes. She wanked off a pig. Slick enough to have the ref wrapped around your
finger. Allegedly.
No, she did live on television. Live on television. on the reality television show, the farm, she masturbated the pig. Do you not remember that?
I don't want to talk about this.
Rebecca, lose her dignity.
I'd saved it.
Slick enough to have the ref wrapped around the finger to a degree. Always talking to the referee. Always influencing. Making himself big. Making himself be known to the referee quite aggressively.
Well, depending on who you speak to, he was never sent off.
I was going to bring this up, yeah.
The play up to the crowd. The hook celebration. Did Ibrox ran up to the Broomlaw? Did the hook celebration just to wind them up? Amazing. Tough but vulnerable. Wins penalties versus Rangers. When because there was a couple of watching some two penalties that he wins against Rangers, and he just falls over. He just uses his intelligence to stand in front of the defender and fall over with no touching on him. Amazing. Smash mouth quotes. I think everybody could virtually predict the result at Ibrox before kickoff. Well, many people did. It's disappointing from the players who have put the effort in. We knew they'd lie down, and they have done. That was against who? Dunfermline. And finally, sometimes just a prick. 2004 game at Ibrox, deliberately handed the ball and got sent off because he just couldn't be asked.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
I rest my case on Chris Sutton.
Yeah, I mean, all those things just fill me with glee listening to them. I just absolutely adore the man. When it was Sutton and Larson, Sutton and Larson together, Sutton was my favourite. Even though Larson was obviously the greatest sort of player that we've seen in our lifetime at Celtic Park, just the sheer bastardness of Chris Sutton made me love him even more. And the longevity I had at Celtic as well was you know, something pretty special too. Paul?
I think Gal made some absolutely cracking points there, and I agree with everything he said. Sutton is, again, a different kind of bastard from Brown and McDonald. And I do think Sutton's definitely got lots of evil genius in him, because the guy's intelligence, as he's proven in his punditry years, you know, he's just as savage as a pundit as he could be as a player. You know, he wasn't just a kind of magician with his feet and his footballing brain. He's a magician like with his mouth as well. I think that's why he's such a popular pundit these days. I was reading a story about him earlier. So I don't know if you guys know this story. So this is when he was playing for Blackburn, and they were 1-0 down against Arsenal with maybe a couple of minutes left. Arsenal player gets injured, they kick the ball out. Sutton basically pressures Arsenal to take the throw in, from which Blackburn nick the ball, win a corner and score, which meant that Arsenal didn't get into the Champions League. That's the end of that season, which is great because fuck Arsenal, mostly, like, garbage. But it's all him, and he says he played, what's the quote? I played the last 4 minutes on the left wing at the tunnel at Highbury. And as soon as the whistle went, bolted up the tunnel. Martin Keown and the other Arsenal players were trying to get in the dressing room after me, but I'd locked myself in the toilet with my feet up against the door. Which is like, okay, I mean, I would have expected something a bit harder from him, but I do love that.
That fits the tough but vulnerable.
Yeah, okay. Didn't want to get battered off a bunch of Arsenal thugs. Fair enough. Yeah. It was just the thing about, like, Sutton on the pitch, especially against Rangers. I just love watching him play against Rangers. Like,
he was a warrior against Rangers. Like, it was war for him.
The game he played in defence, I think it was in the white green whitewash season. He played one of those games as a centre half.
1-0 we won.
I think he just loved those games so much, and he totally understood the rivalry from the start. Again, like McDonald, he was far better player than McDonald, but he could back up his bastardry with amazing goals, amazing play. You know, such an important, multi-talented player for Celtic. A real, real hero and an absolute bastard.
Talk about goals. So, Gal, remember when we did the shirts podcast, and I'm talking about sort of favourite goals and strips, and Sutton's goal against Rangers, where I can't remember who he ragdolls. It might be Conterman or something.
I think it's De Boer. I think it's actually De Boer he ragdolls.
Yeah, and he literally does. I mean, De Boer comes at him, and he pretty much just lobs him out the way. He says, "Nah, I'm not having any of that." And then to go from the immediate kind of thuggery of fuck off, out the way, to then the most delicate, beautiful chips. I mean, it was a sensational goal, and it had, not only was it delicious to watch, but it must have been just genuinely embarrassing as a Rangers fan at their end to see a player effectively just dumped on their arse and then their goalie lobbed. I mean, it was just delicious. But Boud, what do you think about Chris Sutton?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. An utter bastard, but a glorious bastard. He just... you're talking about the partnership with Larson, and we've had so many great strike partnerships, but him and Larson, Sutton and Larson, were so good. And a big part of that was because, see, Sutton just took so much flack for Larson. Not that Larson couldn't have just taken care of himself, but he deflected so much. He got in the way, he held up, and he was just a cunt. And the opposition...
Second time you've used that word, Boud.
Yep, that's it's going to be coming out a little bit more. Don't worry about that.
Gal, do I need to put my foot down here? Do I need to put rein him in a little bit?
No, I like that word.
No, you can just tick the explicit box when you're posting your podcast. It's fine.
Yeah,
there we go. Even as soon as you write the word Boud down, it's impossible for the explicit box not to be ticked. It's like hard coded into the algorithm. I checked.
The last hosting debut I had on here couldn't be publicised, so you're doing well at this point, Martin. Doing well.
Oh, I will check in with Gil soon to see how I'm faring with the second series.
His ability, we've already talked about it, but just to play in different bits of the field and still do that job. We've talked about it a little bit already, where he did get a few cards that he probably shouldn't have. But he was generally pretty smart with it as well, and he generally riled up the opposition and made people make mistakes. And could, as Gal alluded to, even though he was a big man and even though he would rough it up with the biggest centre backs there were, he would still be able to go down like a sack of potatoes and make the ref buy or just see that he'd been fouled.
I was trying to work out how many red cards it was. Like, obviously, Christian claims it's zero. I think it was three in his entire career. Is that right? Does anyone
three
else?
In his career at Celtic, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Which is, for someone who played the way he did, is pretty good going, I would say.
And to be fair, the first one of those against Motherwell at home in his home debut, which is kind of what might have got me a little bit hot under the collar with Christian.
Just a bit, yeah.
Do you know what? We were cutting that quite a lot during the episode. There's a lot of stuff that was going on in between takes where I was still going after him on that point. Yeah. But anyway,
you're totally fine now, Martin. You seem fine. You seem fine.
Yeah, this pod is effectively designed just to end that whole debate on red cards.
I don't think the restraining order is going to be cancelled, Martin. I think you're still going to have abide by that.
Do you know he's not replied to any of my letters yet? None.
No matter what he's written them in, whatever colour of bodily fluid it's written in.
Jesus.
No.
Invisible ink.
No response.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Never mind. Take that too far.
Come on.
Right. Let's rein it back in here. Let's bring it back. So, Christopher Gallagher, anything else you want to cover on Chris Sutton, or would you like to move into your three defining words of the man?
I just love Chris Sutton. I think it was a pleasure watching him. Some people want to see the world-class players in full flow, which we got to see with Henrik Larsson. Some people want to see classy central midfielders that, dictate play and, create. And we got to see that with Paul McStay. Some people want to see aggressive, fantastic defenders that will, take on walls and run through walls for you, which we got to see with Johan Mialbi and Diambobo Baldi. But sometimes you just want to see the glint in the eye and the smile on the face and the elbow in the ribs. And that's Chris Sutton. I've got three words for you. Classy.
Go for it.
Classy.
Yeah.
Intelligent. Aggressive.
Thank you, Chris. So we now have nine defining words of a football bastard. So they are cunning, influential, winner, classy, intelligent, aggressive, antagonistic, niggly, and gobby.
Yes.
To me, perfect. We've written a really strong definition there.
It's a what spectrum, told you, isn't it? It's a spectrum.
Yes. Now, the reason I hadn't told you that we're doing that is because when we get into our final round where you're each up against each other, I'll be scoring you or your sort of pitches on your sort of epitome of a bastard player. I'll be using these nine words as my sort of scoring mechanism. So you've been forewarned. You've got a little bit of time just to now sort of mull that over. But before we get to our kind of final round, we're just going to pause for a little time and just enjoy the wee men of Scottish football, or the wee men in football in general. So the guys who think they can take on the Scott Browns or the Scott McDonalds or the Chris Suttons, but actually they've got nothing. And we're going to call this the Joey Barton section because, I mean, we've already spoken about it. Scott Brown absolutely dominated Joey Barton. I mean, I don't think I've seen a guy have such a fall from grace that quickly in terms of thinking he was a hard man to becoming an absolute nobody. So, guys, I'm going to just open up the floor. Let's just talk about some of the guys who are effectively just shite bags. Chris Bowd, who, when I say the words shite bag in Scottish football or wee men in Scottish football, who jumps off the page for you?
Well, the one that I had was Joey Barton, not knowing that you were going to call this one.
Well, let's dive deep into the inner shitebag that is what, Joey Barton.
The beauty of the Joey Barton shitebag, and usually you'll get a bit of the bravado, but Joey Barton came in talking about dominating, specifically Scott Brown. He talked about winning titles for Rangers, and he gets slapped about. He didn't just get slapped about by Scott Brown, but he gets slapped about by most midfielders in the fucking league.
And Greg Taylor.
Greg Taylor,
yep. And then we're talking about some of the virtues of Scott Brown earlier. The post-match interview is really where Scott Brown shines as well. When he was asked about the competition between him and Joey Barton, in response, there was no competition, which was just factually accurate. Joey Barton came up with some big ideas, thought he was some sort of hard man for some reason, and just get shown up as a nothing. And it's always better when it's a player who's been successful in England and just isn't good enough for Scottish football.
Do you know, see the thing about Joey Barton? I don't think he should ever be considered a football bastard or a hard man. I think he should be just considered a scumbag. Just a pretty horrible man.
Some of the shit he's done, he is just a nasty person. Scumbag. And there's none of the cunning that we talked about. And we talked being a hard man, but it's not just about halving people. But I mean, Joey Barton's not even particularly good at that when he's on the field. But just a small, small person.
There's a lack of brain cells. Lack of brain cells in that man, I would say. You know what I mean? I think the thing is, we all knew what was going to happen when he came up. We all knew he was going to fail, right?
See, at that point in time, though, remember we came off the second Ronnie Dyla season and we were all nervous about Scott Brown. And the way he started that season under Rodgers made you think he's maybe not quite at the races yet as well. Because the thing about Scott Brown is that he needs games to get himself up to speed. And then once he's at that kind of match peak, he's just kind of purrs along nicely. So at the beginning of that season, if you think back to the match in Gibraltar, for example, Brown, I think, was non-existent in that game. And I think we were all slightly nervous that Brown was effectively out in his arse, really, and we didn't have a replacement for him. But he bounced back really quickly. Hey, Gal, you were about to say something there.
I've got some names in terms of, to move on from Joey Barton. I've got some names. I've just jotted some names down there because I didn't know it was just specifically Scottish football. So I'm going to run down some names.
No, it's wee men, but I do love wee men in Scottish.
Okay, wee men in Scottish football. I'm not going to... these are just names that I think should be putting out there, but I'll focus on one, right? So Murray Davidson, I think, is a wee guy who thinks he's a hard man.
He's terrible.
Doogie Imrie is a wee man. Yes. Thinks he's a hard man. Keith Lasley at Motherwell is
Keith Lasley has perennial. built a reputation. Sorry, he's built a career on trying to be Scott Brown.
Pathetic.
Do you think a lot of the problems here with these wee guys is that their names are terrible? You think they've just been carrying the weight of a horrible name, and it's just chipped. It's a chip on the shoulder.
Murray, Doogie, Keith.
Aye. Sorry, Keith.
Yeah. Sorry, Keith. Alan Power at Kilmarnock, just about late.
Scumbag taken out from the call. Disgusting.
That's the exception to the rule. It's a strong name.
It's literally a strong name.
The one I'll focus on, though, is Stephen Naismith.
Yes. Naisy.
Stephen Naismith is a pathetic coward.
And are you challenging him to a fight?
He's a pathetic coward. He's snidey. He always goes for the tackle from the side or the tackle. He never goes in for a 60-40 for the other player. He always goes in for a 70-30. He's a coward. And he always stands up. And you remember him talking over, who was it that was down? Was it Lustig or
Johnny Hayes?
Johnny Hayes, who was down.
He's laughing over. He's done that against players from other teams as well.
And I tell you
in the past year.
I don't celebrate when a player gets injured. But see when he got injured at when we played them in that League Cup semi-final. See, after all he'd done, I just thought to myself, you know, you reap what you sow, my man.
Well, this is a guy who's allegedly, though, you know, quite quietly does quite a lot of work for charity. So you wonder why someone who can be, in inverted commas, a good guy in real life has to be such, and I'm going to use bastard in the negative term here, by be such a bastard on the pitch. Bastard is a term of endearment, right?
That's the thing, though. Like, see Scott Brown will stand up to you face to face. Chris Sutton will stand up to you face to face. Scott McDonald will moan from just below here up at you face to face. Stephen Naismith won't. He'll wait till you've walked away and then he'll kick the back of your heels. Because he's a nothing. He's vile.
He's a wee guy. Do you know what I think about Stephen Naismith is? He strikes me as a player who he feels he's never met his potential, and he takes that frustration out on other players that are better than him. So I think against, for example, Celtic, I think he envisaged himself being, you know, a top quality player, certainly in Scotland, but going down south and being a top-notch striker, being international class. He then had to come back, and he had to come back and play for Kilmarnock, and he said to come back for play for Hearts. And he's probably thinking to himself, my career isn't what it should have been. I'm not as good as I thought I was. And there's moments where he's reminded of that, particularly against Celtic, when he's got guys easily better than him gliding past, and he just can't help himself. He takes that frustration out of them. So we're going to play a little game. So we're going to play good guy wank, but it's going to be hard man or wee man. Okay, so I've got, each year we'll get five names, and it's rapid fire, and you've just got to immediately decide hard man or wee man. Love so, Paul, I'm going to come to you first, okay? Stephen Presley.
Hard man.
Dave Bowman.
Hard man.
Stefan Mahe.
Hard man.
Chick Charnley.
Hard man.
Gary Bolan.
Wee man.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'd agree.
Strong.
That was excellent. That was a really fun thing. Gallen Bowd, you're going to love this.
Okay, Gal, clear your mind. Get ready. Okay. Do you know what? You've got six because I can't count. So
you're happy with that? Excited?
Here we go. In fact, no, I'm going to move one of yours up to Bowd because I've only given him four. I knew there was a problem. There we go.
Is Christian Wolfe listening to this?
Hey, you know.
Do we need to get Ian Duggan in here to help?
Shots fired.
This is the last thing any pod needs is Ian Duggan coming in to help. Okay, Are you ready, Gal? Clear your head. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Steve Kirk.
Wee man.
Oh, okay. Pasquale Bruno.
Wee man.
Scott Wilson.
Wee man.
Darren Young.
Wee man.
Gary Caldwell.
Wee man.
You take that back.
I was like, why is he pausing?
Strong. And you almost blew it with Gary Caldwell. If you'd come up with, do you know what? He's non-existent to me. So it'd be perfectly fine if you just left it blank, Sidna.
Yeah, not good. I'm just going to refuse to answer. I don't hear a name.
Okay, Bide.
Heed.
I've saved some crackers for you, so get ready.
I'm ready. My mind is a zen forest.
Well, that forest is about to be painted maroon. Ian Black.
Oh, wee man. Tiny John man.
Excellent answer. John Hughes.
Hardman.
Neil Simpson.
Wee man. Tiny man. No, not tiny. Small.
Pat McGinley.
He's just a wee man.
Wee man.
Ross Tokley.
Wee man. Can I do them for you, for you, Martin? I've got four I could give you.
Yep, let's go.
Actually, I've only got three because we mentioned one of the other ones. Oh, no, I've got four. They're not just Scotland, so they're international.
That's fine.
Andy Halliday.
Andy Halliday. Yeah, okay. Epitome of a wee man. Perfect, yes.
Dennis Wise.
Wee man.
Ben Thatcher.
Ah. What did we say about those names?
Exactly.
Do you know what? I think he might be a hard man.
Edgar Davids.
He's a wee man.
Yeah.
I would have put them all as wee man. I think Ben Thatcher's a shite bag.
He is a shite
bag. Do you know what? I'm struggling to recollect who Ben Thatcher is, really.
He's the guy who almost killed Pedro Mendes, which is, fair enough. But at Man City Stadium, he elbows him and he... Ben Thatcher's is your character. He's the English version of Stephen Naismith.
Oh, okay. I'll redact that. Let's wee man him.
I loved that. I loved having a list of names put to me and I had to decide if they were one thing or the other. I loved that.
Yeah, I love it too. It's exciting. And those names, some of those names, Dave Bowman. I haven't thought about Dave Bowman for about 25 years.
I know.
Class.
I actually watched when Scotland played. I think it's who did they play? They played in a friendly in 1992 or 1993, I think it was. And Paul McStay scores. Dave Bowman makes his debut, and for Scotland, and he's sensational. So there you go.
Yeah, Dave Bowman.
So that is, I never envisaged that we would be singing Dave Bowman's praises on a pod, on any pod, but
Oh, this bit will get cut out. I'm not having people think that Dave Bowman's sensational, but that's just what they said.
You're right. A Bowman man.
You're a Bowman man.
I'm a Bowman man.
Okay, so we'll move on to the final part of tonight's pod. So this is called Bastards Compete. And to this point, we've all been working together to define a football bastard, but now each of our cynics are going to go up against each other. So they've been tasked with coming up with their epitome of a football bastard. They're the one player that truly defines the word football bastard. Now we've come up with our definition, so the nine words that they're going to have to try and sort of comply with are cunning, influential, winner, classy, intelligent, aggressive. Can he read my spelling? But that says antagonistic, niggly, and gobby. So that's what I'll be scoring them against. They'll each make the pitch to me. I'll have the final say, but before I do have a final say, the other cynics will be able to effectively try and take down that their pitch, effectively just make him look like an arsehole, really. That's the whole point. I'm just trying to eke out the inner bastard in each of you. So there'll be some cross-examination. Gentlemen, is there anybody who is really keen to go first here? Is anybody thinking they're going to be top dog, or will I just randomly pick one of you?
Randomly pick.
Yeah,
randomly pick. Okay.
Yeah.
We had Bowd first time last, so let's go with Christopher Gallagher. You shall go first. Who is your definition of a football bastard?
Thank you. The floor is mine, I'm led to believe, Martin. Can I?
Yes, it is. Yes.
I start and then I decide when we stop, and then I'll take questions. I'll take, you know.
You can take insults as well.
Decide nothing, wee man.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the Cynic Court. Footballing bastardry is an art form. No one did it quite as well as Ronaldo Paulo Montero Iglesias, or as I like to call him, the man that doesn't smile. He's a sophisticated bastard. Montero played in Serie A pretty much most of his career. He played for Atalanta, he played for Juventus. He was an exceptional... So let's just start with his footballing ability. He was an exceptional footballer. Some people look by his footballing ability to say, no, he was just a bastard. No, he was more than just a bastard. And that's the thing. He had bastard levels. Spent 9 years at Juventus. 61 caps for Uruguay. The bastard's bastard of an international football team. His father was part of that Uruguay team from 1986 that kicked Scotland off the pitch.
Points will not be awarded for dramatic pauses.
Sophisticated. 4 Serie A titles. 3 Coppa Italia titles. Uncompromising and brutally effective. He treated an 80-20 challenge in your favour as an easily winnable tackle. He never backed down. Why was he a bastard? He was a bastard because of his use of psychological warfare. He spoke to you. He nipped you. He nipped the inside of your thigh.
He nipped you.
He nipped you.
Wow. I'd like some cam here. He nipped the inside of your thigh.
Hot under the collar here.
His two-footed tackle is the equivalent of a simple interception for other defenders. This is what I'm trying to say. His ability to pinpoint a defender's weakness and work on them makes him more akin to Ric Flair than Bobby Moore. He worked opponents, aggressively tackling early on to drive them out wide as they attacked, because he was intelligent enough to know you can't do anything out there. There's nothing out there. Why was he a bastard? He was a bastard because he was a winner. He was once quoted as saying, I'm not thinking about being a role model for my sons or for the fans watching at home. I'm a winner. He did everything within his arsenal. He did whatever he could to make sure that his team won because he was a leader. Because he was influential. He influenced people at the back. He took the Paulo Ferraras. He took the, you know, the Mark Julianos. And he says, look, you defend, I'll do the rest. I'll do everything else. Because he was a leader. He was influential. He was a winner. In 2003, after Chris Sutton had dived for a penalty, this is how classy this gentleman is. Classy. He came out and he admitted to crossing, when he crosses the line of a football match, it doesn't matter. I don't criticise those who tend to dive because football is for smart people. I am a defender who comes up against cheating strikers every week. Classy, hard, intelligent. He knows he's up against it. He knows he has to use every little piece to get at you. I mean, statistically, he got a yellow card every 5 games and he got a straight red every 21 games. He holds the record for the most red cards in Serie A history. He has 21 career red cards because he never, ever backed down. because Paolo Montero is shit. I know I fucked that.
Absolutely fucked.
I had to think, but
all of it though, all of it. So much work. So much
I'm not finished. I'm not finished,
and it's undone.
This is how undone.
Bowed. It's been long, but it is going to be longer. You just need to.
This is how
a little bit longer.
He was an antagonist, but this is how great he was. He didn't pick on the weak. I'm going to cast your mind back to December 2000. The Derby d'Italia. Luigi Di Biagio, a hard man, one of the hardest men in Italy. December 2006. It's a corner. You know, it's a corner. Montero looks over his shoulder. He sees where the referee is. Looks over his other shoulder. He sees where the linesman is. And he right hooks him. He right hooks a hard man, a so-called hard man. And when he's down on the ground, he gives it a bit of that. He gobs off at him. He's a bit gobby. He tells him, look you, this is for winners. I'm a winner. The game finishes 2-2. he's a master of the dark arts. A master. There's a story in Ancelotti's autobiography where some ultras heckled Zidane. Zidane was his best friend when he was at Juventus. His best friend.
He's friends with Zidane. Weird. Carry on.
When we got off the bus, the team bus, Montero, there was some ultras and they were heckling Zidane. Montero didn't like it. He takes his glasses off, walks up, and he knocks fuck out of four of them. That's his own fans. That's how much of a bastard this guy is. But he's classy enough to defend his friend because he's a leader. He's inspirational. To end up, I'm going to drop some, just one more comment about this guy. I don't think it is true to say that you are disloyal to football if you feign an injury or tug a shirt or do something else to win the game, as winning games is the purpose of football. I rest my case.
That was very, very strong.
Very long.
Very long, longer than I had envisaged. But do you know what? A passionate man, you know, deserved that air. Gentlemen, Paul.
Well, I'd like to start with a quote. A wee guy quote. I don't think it's true to say that you're disloyal to football if you feign an injury or tug a shirt or do something else to win the game, as winning games is the purpose of football. Does that sound familiar, Cal?
It sounds like a bastard would say that.
There's the thing about being a bastard or being a wee guy. This guy is a wee guy, right? 21 red cards. I mean, that just makes up for a complete lack of. I mean, you talked about him being skillful and cunning and just a big dummy. Basically, just a big dummy.
Do you know how many of those red cards were on the basis of last man takedowns? Genuinely.
Tell us, Gal, how many of them were that?
Well, Paul, I'll tell you, I actually watched every single one of his red cards and not one of them was a last-minute takedown. They were all just pointless wastes. Some of them weren't even on the pitch. He just punched people in a crowd, I think. Something to do with Zidane. It was a disgrace. Man's a disgrace.
Martin, I mean, who would be friends with Zinedine Zidane as your best pal? It's a very strange choice of best pal. I mean, would I want to be best pals with someone who is not as good as Marco Materazzi? Probably not.
Martin, I'd just like to say that what they're both saying isn't really deflecting away from him being a football bastard. He's just talking about his...
I don't think he was Zidane's best friend. I think he was his errand boy.
Would a true football bastard play in charity matches? I don't think so.
Oh, I would. I really would wait until, you know, you have.
Just to take it back there, Gal, as you're saying, you know, they're maybe not challenging enough on him being a football bastard. I don't appreciate Lee Wallace kind of grassing. Okay, you know, I'll determine whether or not their challenges are fair or not. You just stick to prepping for your player, and whatever they throw at you, you just got to deal with it. Doesn't matter if you like it or not. I don't be a wee man about this, you know. Yep.
Do football bastards play in charity matches? Yes. Yeah, they do. How many of his red cards were last man? Well, first of all, he'd 16 in Serie A, and upwards of, no, he's 16 yet, 16. Six of them were because someone else had made a mistake, and he was actually putting himself on the line, taking not only a suspension, but taking a fine. Because he's a leader, because he's a winner, because he wants his team to win. He literally finds
behavior though.
No, of course it is, because he's still giving away a red card.
I'm glad you mentioned that again, Gal. You said he's a leader. You've said that quite a few times, leader. Because obviously he was Juventus's captain.
He was the Uruguay captain.
Oh, in 2006, at the end of his career, when he was just the old guy who got the captain's armband for being old. Is that right? So much of a leader that he didn't really captain.
Let me ask you this.
Doesn't sound like a leader. That's all I'm saying.
Let me ask you this.
What kind of bastard lives and works in La Marche in Italy, right?
One of the worst parts of Italy. Okay, Baud, who was the captain of Uruguay? And in fact, you know what? Why don't you name, other than Luis Suarez, name four other Uruguay players?
Nah, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, well, there you go. See,
the blonde guy that played for Man United.
I see, you don't even know either, Paul.
Forlan. Yeah,
I'm dealing with children.
It's factually inaccurate.
It's not fair to Martin because he's put a lot of effort and time. Oh, was he the captain at the World Cup? Yeah, he was the captain at the World Cup.
When he was the old guy. When he's just the old head.
What is Scott Brown just now? There you go. So the fact of the matter is, he did captain the World Cup, captain Uruguay at the World Cup. So
your Scott Brown point didn't make any sense.
Scott Brown's the just old like guy, entire... and that's the only reason he got the captaincy.
I mean, what kind of football bastard is inspired by Pep Guardiola? I mean, how basic is that?
By Pep Guardiola? What are you talking about?
Bit of a basic bitch. It's basically like saying like Oasis.
I don't understand what you're talking about. Well, how is he inspired by Pep Guardiola?
As a manager.
We're not talking about him as a manager. We're talking about him as
a player. Yeah, we are. We're talking about him as a manager and a player.
No, we're talking about him as a player.
And a manager.
No, not as a manager. Or as a man. We're talking about him as a footballing bastard.
Left back as well. I mean,
he was a centre half, you fucking dick. That's how much you fucking know about Paulo Montero. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, come on, Bud.
You've went on to Wikipedia and you've looked at other positions and it says left back. Jesus.
Wikipedia doesn't do that.
Well, there you go. You've created your own new way of finding out. You've created your own way of fucking something up to the point where
let's just pause for a second. This is exactly, it could not have worked out any better. This is, I thought we might have just a little bit of a squabble, but yes, this has become full on. We found bastards in amongst us already. It's beautiful to listen to. It did get a bit shouty, so let's all just take a little second. I'm going to give Gal you're going to get 10 seconds, Gal, just your final remarks on Paulo, what was his name, Ferreira?
Shade.
Paulo Montero is the quintessential footballing bastard. A hard man, a leader, a master of the dark arts, the last of the quintessential footballing bastards.
So strong words from Gal there.
Sorry, just looking at your face.
Okay, Paul, I'm coming to you next. Who is your definition of a football bastard?
I think we can all agree that the most important definition of a football bastard, the most important of those nine, is aggression for the noun. And there are very few players that have got like a wanker montage on YouTube. There are very few players that are universally loathed. Very few players that have been described as the most hated man in football. Very few players that have performed a tackle that can only be described as an act of brutality. There's only a few players that could really be described as like the physical embodiment of shithousery. And again, this player, very few players can say they've played for three scumbag teams, Wolves, Millwall and Rangers. That man is Kevin Muscat. Kevin Muscat, the player that was such a liability that he was not allowed to play against Celtic when he played for Rangers. Now, antagonistic? Sure. Constantly getting in scrapes with other players, constantly getting in scrapes with the referee, constantly getting in scrapes with other fans. Because he used that antagonism and that kind of dark intelligence to wind people up, whether he was elbowing players, going in for two-footed tackles, kicking the ball off the referee, fighting with people, stamping on people, body-checking folk. This guy could do it all. A true football bastard. I mean, how many football bastards with the sort of would be classy enough to instigate a 21-man melee and not be part of it? Huh? Evil genius as well. This is the guy that Ian Wright called a lowlife. I feel like that was slightly unfair. I mean, okay, he did get constant bans for violent behaviour and one of his clubs did threaten to kick him out. But we're talking about football bastards here. And if you're going to be a bastard, be the best bastard. And Kevin Muscat was the best bastard. To quote Ashley Young, Kevin Muscat said he would break my legs if I went past him. This is the guy who lost a court case for almost ending the career of Matty Holmes, almost ending the career of Craig Bellamy and Christophe Dugarry as well. He's such a bastard. He's such an ultimate, absolute bastard that he won the treble with Rangers. You know, and I don't normally pay tribute to that, but we're talking shithousery here. This guy's got it. Also, though, not only did he win the treble at Ibrox, but he's such a winner. He blessed himself at Ibrox as well, right? Now, what kind of person would do that? A bastard. 123 yellow cards and 12 red cards in his career. Astounding. Absolutely astounding. And the fact that he was the captain of so many teams that he played for showed that managers really felt he was an influential player. He was the captain of Australia. He led his country because he was such a classy guy. Actually been described as football's dirtiest ever player. I'd say he actually made tackling, bad tackling, an art. And also, just to prove his class, you know, the guy knew how to apologise. So after almost ending the career of a guy called Adrian Zahara, when he was playing for Melbourne, with might have been the worst tackle of all time, he said, it was an incident that I deeply regret. Now, I think that takes cunning to actually perform the tackle, but also class to apologise for it. It was a mistimed tackle, dreadfully mistimed. So the guy knows, you know, he knows he made a mistake. But at no point did I have any intent to injure the player because he's a winner and he won the tackle. Unfortunately, I mistimed the tackle terribly. Maybe the game's telling me it's passed me by. Now, to have the wherewithal to do that to someone and finally admit that, you know, your career, that's it, time to call time. On your, the sun has set on your day in the sun. I think just proves that this guy was a bastard from start to end. I mean, it's the 12 reds that really do it for me. I think if you want the ultimate football bastard, you've got to look at the disciplinary records. And as Louis McAfee says, stats are facts. 123 yellow cards proves that Kevin Muscat is the ultimate and only football bastard. Thank you. I will not take any questions.
You don't need to take any questions. You will take questions,
yes.
So we talked about this at the start. Being a football bastard isn't about just being an overly aggressive hacker. And that's what you've described here.
Correct.
You've described somebody who just is a he's a hack man.
He's an artist. He's an artist.
He's an absolute nobody.
This is the guy that invented new ways of tackling Bowd.
More importantly, if you're going to choose a Hun bastard, he's not the best Hun bastard. In fact, he's not the best Australian Hun bastard. That's how poorly you've chosen here, Paul.
Oh.
Craig Moore's more of a football bastard than Kevin Muscat.
Case closed.
So, I'm not going to throw shade on people with ginger hair, right? I think that is a real bastard thing to do. Kevin Muscat was the bastard's bastard.
Kevin Muscat.
Craig Muir's just a wee guy. Just a wee guy.
Kevin Muscat was a thug. Kevin Muscat was a thug. There was no intelligence there. There was no intelligence. Yeah. He was
There was intelligence. There was. I mean, you don't become the manager of Melbourne City for seven seasons if you're not intelligent, gal.
If you're a football ambassador, you need to be a good player, because otherwise you're just a shite player trying to even it out. And that's what he was. He was just a shite player who couldn't keep up.
Do you play for Crystal Palace, Wolves, Rangers, Millwall?
That's a definition of a shite player. That is a shite player. For me, that's a
Sunshine George Cross.
Yeah. Well, maybe not Sunshine.
Heidelberg United. Yeah.
He's a hatchet man, Paul. Look, you've put a very good, you've done very well. You've put a nice argument forward. But what you've described, my friend, isn't a football bastard.
Quality player.
It's a hatchet.
You know what?
He knew he was a thug.
Football manager,
thug.
A limited defender.
It's a scumbag. Brilliant. I mean, you have basically described
shenanigans.
You've described
every single game shenanigans.
You've got our sympathy. You don't know the definition of a football bastard.
Exactly. Excellent point. Excellent point. It's a little too long, you know. Boomer needs his wee sleep because, you know, we're an hour and 34 minutes into this thing and he's forgot, what was I support? What's a football?
Well, most of that time was taken up with your fucking soliloquy on Paulo Montero, to be honest, Gil.
That's a bit. You could have went
longer. We all fell asleep by the way.
Paul Carlin, see when definitions arsehole comes up, you've got a shout.
You win that podcast. But I mean, Paul, cunning and classy and intelligent are not words that are associated with Kevin Muscat. No. Do you know why he had to apologise to the guy? This is an actual fact, because he was getting threatened by police charges and he had to apologise to the guy. He didn't do it because he's classy. He had to do it or he would have had charges pressed against him. So if anything, he's a shitebag. Because
have you seen how well he shaves his head? That to me is the definition of classy.
I see what you're doing now. Yeah. You're just
right in the wood. It looks really good. It looks really good in a suit, by the way.
Paul, do everyone the right thing and just say that you're out the race now. Come on, just do it.
Listen,
it's embarrassing.
Martin wanted a bastard. I brought a bastard.
No, you didn't.
I brought the biggest bastard.
You brought a prick. You brought a thug. You brought a hatchet, man.
Do you know what I think we've seen here, though, is there's different ways of being a bastard, and I think Paul has just, even in the way that he's responding to these challenges here, he's riding each tackle with a Scott Brown kind of S. Now, I'm not going to give anything away. Do I think Kevin Muscat is a football bastard? I've yet to determine that, but I must say, very impressed by the way that Paul is backing away the challenges rather than calling out, you know, calling the other guys children.
Yeah, Mark, when you've got two guys just shrieking at you, you know, when the tone of their voice has just got to such a high pitch that you can't actually hear the words.
You know, you're not saying anything.
All you can do is embody the classiness of Kevin Muscat and just bat away the comments.
Tell me about a time where Kevin Muscat got out of a booking or influenced the referee or did anything other than tackle someone. Essentially what you're talking about with everything you've said about Kevin Muscat, it's about tackling.
See if you are not a classy player. How can you score 34 goals in 138 for 38
I bet you 25 of them came when he was in Australia with his last year. Am I right?
I do not wish to comment on that.
There you go.
The other thing is, we're not judging the cunningness and bastardness of Paul Carling. We're judging Kevin Muscat.
That's very true.
Your ability to dodge these arguments.
Don't you worry. I am still. I have a very keen ear. I'm hearing all the arguments, the strong points and the bad points. I was just making an observation that the different ways in which people have been able to cope with the challenge, that's all I was doing. Don't worry. I've got my points. We will find the winner. Paul, well done. Good work.
Listen, Martin, you know I'm a cool guy. I remain cool under pressure.
Unlike these two, who are just driven by emotion.
Paul, we finished. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. You were doing really well. You don't need to go back. We're doing all right. Okay. Christopher Bowd, please tell me who your definition of a football bastard is.
So my definition of a football bastard is Patrick Vieira. I'll be quick, don't worry. I told a little fib. I said I've not written a script like Gal. I have actually wrote a little paragraph. It's just adjectives. How I, before this podcast started, would have described Patrick Vieira. It's cunning, influential, classy, intelligent, aggressive, antagonistic, niggly, and gobby. The reason I picked Patrick Vieira is we've talked about it all throughout the pod. You've got to be a hard man. Patrick Vieira is a hard man, but you've also got to be a great football player. Patrick Vieira, I think, is just, I mean, he's a Rolls Royce of a football player. Yes, he does the dirty work. Yes, he's aggressive, but he's got technique. He's a big guy, but he doesn't look slender, but you know, he, because of his height, he can carry that weight without being bulky. He can pass.
I don't think we're getting to the logistics of how well he carries his weight, but okay. Well,
Paul was talking about how good Kevin Muscat looks in a suit. So I'm building up to that. I mean, Patrick Vieira in a suit is delicious.
Have you seen him walk, by the way? Fucking hell.
Stride, float. He's got technical ability, but he's also got the dig. He's got a bit of class. He's very well spoken. He seems classy because he's French. So even if he was an absolute bum of a man, he would seem cool and collected. But he is actually, as I say, a very intelligent guy, very well spoken.
Stick to the player, not stereotypes, please.
What? Not that's just of him. I was touching on French stereotypes, but this is true of him. But he's got that little niggly bit. Something that Gal mentioned that I forgot to pull him up on. He was saying that Paolo Ferrari or whatever
Lolo Ferrari, I think it was. Lolo
that's
Ferrari.
That's it. Yeah. Yep. Doesn't pick on the weak link. That's what a football bastard should be doing. He's looking to undo the team. So you pick on the weak link, and you don't just undo him, you undo his teammates, who are then upset that you're picking on the weak link, which is exactly what Vieira would do, and specifically and famously done against Neville, which riled up Roy Keane, and they had the big bust up in the tunnel. Gal talked about it in his own list. As much as you should generally be smart and cunning with it, sometimes you make silly mistakes, and Vieira did that as well. There's the Neil Ruddock incident, and there's a few others where there's maybe a little bit of stamping or kicking that's a bit silly. But in the general, he got through games doing the nasty work and getting away with it. And he took the Arsenal team, who were playing against a dominant Man U side, and carried them to the point of being an invincible side in England. And it was Patrick, obviously he had great players around him, but Patrick Vieira was incredibly important around that. He had so many flair players and players that maybe say light, but you know, players that were there to excite the crowd and score goals. They weren't there to do the hard work. Which is exactly what he did. He let the rest of the team flourish while still being perfectly capable of getting forward and creating. But he did that nasty, dirty work because he was a right bastard. And that's really it.
A really, really well prepared, well thought out argument from Chris Bide. But nevertheless, a very, very strong candidate as a football bastard.
The other thing as well, I mean, he absolutely dominated Steven Gerrard as he came into football as well, which was delicious to see.
Okay. The floor is open. Gentlemen, do you wish to cross-examine Mr. Bowd?
Give Gal first dibs.
Not only is Patrick Vieira not a football bastard amongst the men already mentioned. He wasn't even a football bastard in that Arsenal team. Martin Keown, that's a football bastard. Lee Dixon, that's a football bastard. You talk about how Patrick Vieira did all the hard work. No, Patrick Vieira was brought in because they had people to do the hard work. Patrick Vieira was brought in to not do the hard work. He was brought in to make things happen. Patrick Vieira only had one real game where he was up against it, and that was Roy Keane. And Roy Keane swatted him away like he was a little fly. Because he was a little baby fly to Roy Keane. Was a footballing bastard. Roy Keane dominated Patrick Vieira. He took him to the cleaners on a semi-daily basis. And see, when Roy Keane got put over by Vieira when Vieira won, Vieira did that because he was a better footballer than Roy Keane.
Vieira's far too graceful and talented to be a football bastard.
Correct.
I mean, also only 10 red cards in his whole career.
Pathetic.
Fuck's sake.
Again, Paul, you've got the definition wrong. This is just helping my argument.
Vieira, he would fight against the likes of Roy Keane, who we mentioned, and like Neil Ruddock, who were both much, much bigger football bastards than he was.
Yeah.
And he lost. The guy had like a fraction of the arrogance of those guys.
Yeah.
He had more arrogance.
Let me just say this.
He just carried it better.
Patrick Vieira was an exceptional footballer. One of the best players in his position of all time. Genuinely, right up there. Fantastic. He occasionally lost his head. Yeah, he did. People do. He was not a footballing bastard. Patrick Vieira was a bit of an arse sometimes. He was hard, but you said it yourself, Chris. Just because you're hard doesn't mean you're a footballing bastard. He had the odd late tackle. You said it yourself, Chris. Just because you've got the odd late tackle doesn't make you a football bastard. There was nothing about Vieira that would say that he was a footballing bastard. His nemesis was a footballing bastard. And that's why the rivalry. Because you had football bastardry versus elegance and class. And the elegance and class would sometimes get over and the football bastardry would sometimes win. You've made the mistake of seeing a rivalry.
Of Roy Keane. He made Roy Keane a better player. Why were they such nemesis? Because they were such bastards. They were both bastards.
Was he antagonistic?
No. Not really. Was he niggly? Not really. Was he gobby? I don't really remember him being gobby. Was he cunning? Certainly not. Was he influential? Yeah, arguably.
Absolutely.
Was he a winner? Well, he won he won many trophies.
Yep,
intelligent?
Yeah.
I'll give him that as well.
Aggressive? Did he win a World Cup?
Did he
go to the biggest international stage in the world and win a World Cup?
He might have won a World Cup. He did it as a magnificent, graceful midfielder.
Did he captain the France team? No, he didn't. Because maybe he wasn't old enough. Fuck up.
Did he captain Arsenal? Through their most successful period ever as an invincible?
Essentially, you've made a mistake, Bowden. God love you, because I'm sure when you were on Wikipedia, you just picked a random midfielder who was hard. You've made a mistake because what it was Roy Keane.
He was massively hard.
Football bastardry versus elegance and class. It's the story, it's old as time. It's Paul McStay versus Ian Ferguson. That's what Vieira and Keane was.
Let me look up my definition of a bastard as agreed by this committee. Oh, classy. Classy is in there. Classy does not disqualify him from being a bastard.
Yeah.
He was, in fact,
He was intelligent. See what you've done.
He was an aggressive player.
Yeah, we've just gone through this.
We've done this already. We've reviewed
this. This was a misstep for you, man. I'm sorry. Brown as a Celtic bastard was great. Vieira is a football bastard.
I look forward to who Martin decides out of Montero and Musket, because God love you, Bowd. You've tried your best. You've just picked. You've went mainstream. You should do your your Celtic thing with the Twitter with the fancy hip guy, hipster Celtic. You should have went Mike Galloway.
Uruguayan Montero.
You've made a misstep. You've made a misstep, and God love you.
God love you, Bowdy, but you've
made a wee misstep there. What you've done is the right choice. You should have went Martin Keown, because he is a football bastard. God love you. You could have just said, when Martin Keown against... I'll make a case for Martin Keown. Martin Keown against Ruud van Nistelrooy, the most bastard thing ever. Martin Keown against Manchester United when he kicks Brian McClair, the most bastard thing ever. I'll make a case for you. Martin Keown's going to change it to Martin Keown.
I have no interest in Martin Keown.
Can I just say, the biggest battle of the bastards in football history is Keane versus Vieira, which by definition makes Vieira a bastard.
It's actually not.
It's Musket versus Holmes.
can I just say the fact that there's been no Game of Thrones reference is congratulations.
Because it's a shite programme.
Oh, no,
I've never seen it.
Watch it. It's pure shite.
Although Battle of the Bastards, I guess, is, yeah.
Okay, so we've this has gone far, far beyond my expectations. I thought, you know, put you all against each other, maybe you'd be all too friendly, but no, you've really taken it to heart. And I think each one of you have evidenced your own bastardry, but in different ways. I would say Gal, very aggressive.
Emotion, Martin. Emotions take the better of him. This happened in the Cynic Wars. Absolutely lost it, really embarrassed himself, as he has again tonight.
Thank you. Now, moving on to yourself, Paul.
Cunning, classy, influential, antagonistic.
Paul, do you know what? I have to admire the way in which you didn't rise to the other guys. A little bit of the Scott Browns about you there, in which, you know, you had some two-footed challenges coming in, but you were level-headed throughout. There was no red mist. That was admirable. I do have to call you up, though. Bringing a Rangers player to the table, I've yet to decide whether that is a smart move in terms of bastardry or a really, really bad move. I've not quite figured out. Bowed. I'm sorry, but you fucked it, because you should have picked Roy Keane. If you were going to go down that route, you should have picked Roy Keane.
Well,
you fucked it.
He played for Celtic. He wasn't a bastard for Celtic, but he did play for Celtic.
Well, do you know what? Do you know what, Bowd? You're quite right. I said a non-Celtic player, so I stand corrected there. You've challenged back, and I accept that. I said no non-Celtic player. Roy Keane was a Celtic player, so you're quite right. But I'm still pondering on whether I'm waggling my pen quite a lot. I'm sorry, that's quite aggressive. I'll
just
put my
at
pen
me,
down
not not at the other guys. I'm the
that's
guy
right. I'm so, I'm sorry. I'm leaning quite forward a minute. I seem to have got into this now too. My back's get up. I really hope we haven't given anybody, you know, back pains or anything with this pod. But anyway, right. I've come to my decision. First of all, I've enjoyed seeing you all get quite irate in your own special ways. In no particular order, okay? So there isn't a first, second, or third. But I'm just going to say, I'm sorry, but Kevin Muscat falls just too much on the hatchet man side rather than the bastard side. If Chris Sutton is my idol, Chris Sutton is 10 times the man that Kevin Muscat is. So I think that it was a strong, strong case you made, and you were very able at batting back the challenges there. But ultimately, I can't support Kevin Muscat as the ultimate bastard. I'm sorry, Paul.
That's okay, Martin. This is your podcast. These are your rules. Thank you for hearing my side of the story. I'll just take the punishment that's coming, the way Kevin Muscat would, with dignity and class.
Do you know what? I don't think there's anything dignified about him. And I think it's really interesting that your two bastards are both Australian. I don't know.
Kevin Muscat is actually English.
What?
He's born in England.
But he played English for Australia. Does he identify as Australian? Maybe, Paul.
Well,
it's
born
not
in
for
England.
You to decide.
Born in England. But yeah, I was going to make a virtue of that, but then I figured it might look a little bit like I hate people from Australia, which I obviously don't. Tam Rogic's one of the best guys of all time. I've got high hopes for Daniel Arzani.
we'll always have Jackson Irvine as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Great hair.
Yeah. Okay. So, Paul, strong argument, but ultimately, no, Kevin Muscat cannot be our true definition of a football bastard. So that leaves us with Paulo Montero and Patrick Vieira. And it's a challenging one, because obviously Vieira, you have more visuals going through your mind because it's a more recent example. Whereas Montero, it's almost the name that lingers more than the actual sort of matches themselves. Just based on both of your performances, Gal, you know I'm a man that likes preparation. So I afforded you the time to go through your dossier. It did go on too long. I don't like that length of time. So if we do this again, you know, maybe need to rein it in a little bit, be more succinct. You know, we've all got dinners to have. But anyway, it was a strong, strong case. But I think it was a strong case, and I think you had a lot to say because he gave you a lot of material. So that was solid. Patrick Vieira. Oh, bowdy, bowdy, bowdy. I really love Patrick Vieira as a footballer.
I've been digging it with the preparation. That's what's happened here. Don't let that bind you.
Do you know what? It's going to Paulo Montero.
Paulo Montero. Well done, Gal. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah,
Thank you. Thank you. And like classily, like Paulo Montero, I'll take it because I know I'm a winner. So, thank you.
You're also gobby.
I'm quite gobby, aye, sorry.
Aye.
Niggly.
Yeah. I'll leave.
Well, I hope we've all kind of calmed down a little bit now. I think we're all friends again. Now.
Martin, I've been calm the whole way through. I'm fine. It's these two guys, they're wildly escalating emotions that I'd be worried about, you know, like really things got a bit out of hand there. But I feel that you kept us all in order incredibly well, Martin.
I'm
buttering you up for the next episode. That's not obvious.
Do you know, yeah, we should go to Tony Hayes now. So Tony, do I have a second episode?
You have a history of making good podcasts. And yes, you've got a second series.
Back of the net.
And now the result all comes into focus, Martin. Worry about that.
Now, just before we go, I'm just going to tell you who my ultimate football bastard is. And as much as Paulo Montero is the winner amongst you three, my football bastard eats your football bastard for breakfast. My football bastard is the dagger. Hristo Stoichkov.
Oh. Why? Give us a bit.
So Stoichkov, when he first started out playing in Bulgaria, in his first season, he was actually suspended for life, but it then got repealed. But he was in a brawl, and him and three other players were actually banned for life, and it was put back to a 1 month suspension. So you got to challenge, you know, the Bulgarian FA on that one. But when he moved to Barcelona, that man is the epitome of elegance, class, but scumbaggery on the pitch. He just was such a hothead and would not let anything go. Winning to him by all means, any means necessary, that was Hristo Stoichkov. So some of those beautiful moments in 90s football come from his feet, but some of the ugliest, horrible things as well are also part of him too. Just one of my all-time football heroes, but I mean, just a really, really dirty bastard. His first season at Barcelona, he stamped on the referee's foot. He got sent off and then he stamped on him. I think he only got a four-match ban for that as well. But, I mean, just a history of hot-headedness, but also just a beautiful footballer to watch. Played alongside another football bastard in Romario to become, you know, one of the greatest footballing partnerships I can recollect. Just two absolute madmen. There's a brilliant article in I think it's 442 about the pair of them in that one season. But also the other thing that I like about Stoichkov is when he received his Ballon d'Or, he said there's only two Christs, one of them's up in heaven and the other one's just won the award.
What a voice.
Yeah, so Stoichkov is my number one football bastard.
To be fair, Stoichkov, Romario and Hagi are a front three of football bastards, to be fair. So, very interesting.
I was going to say, the only thing that disappointed me about your stories there, when you first said he was banned for life, I thought you were just going to say, and he was such a bastard, they just started playing anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've enjoyed it. Gents, thank you very much. I hope everybody at home has enjoyed this too. Look forward to hearing any other sort of football bastards that we've missed out on, you know, throw it on the flip chat or whatever. But Paul, thank you for your time. Hope you enjoyed yourself.
Thanks, mate. Great doing podcasts with you. Love to the two Christophers as well.
Christopher Bowd, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me. It was great. Good laugh. Cheers. Hail, hail.
And Tony Hayes, Chris Gill, thank you very much for that second episode. Have you enjoyed yourself?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks to Bowd and Paul and yourself up the Montero.
Okay, yeah, so I've never really wrapped up a pod before, so let's just call it there. Right, thanks. Bye.